Accession number 32394, Mr. Don Farrington, Reel 8. Now, so you've landed, you've got this newspaper.
Yeah.
Now, do you know where the rest of the crew are? Because, I mean...
No, not at that time. I didn't know anything at all about them.
So what did you decide to do? You decided to go south and try and contact the French resistance.
Yeah,
so
that's
happened?
Right, yeah. Well, the first thing I did was to go... There was a farm not too far... and all this time, there was a dog barking. I remember that when I'd landed. This would be the farm. There was a farm very near too. And I thought, well, I'll hide up and see during the day just exactly what was happening in the area before I made any move at all. I thought, if there's not much activity and there's no sign of any Germans or anything peculiar happening, I'd go down at night and see what they thought. And so my first contact was, I'm sure it was a Belgian couple who owned the farm, and I knocked on the door.
Belgian? I thought you were
in France. I'm talking about the couple of farmers.
Oh, they were,
farm
yeah.
people. I think they were Belgian, if I remember rightly. Anyway, whatever it was, I only knew a few words of French, but I said, aviator, last night, and he knew immediately. So between us, it's surprising how you can get through all this not knowing the language. As saying RAF, of course, which they would know what RAF was. So he immediately and his wife said, ask me to go in. And eventually when we had a chat, funny how you can get to understand one another by various signs or methods. And again, eventually they said they knew about my the aircraft, and we knew that somebody was in the vicinity for what had gone on during the day. So they said, we can't sort of keep you here, but what we will do, we'll give you food to take with you. And see if he can link up with somebody else. But from their point of view, it was too dangerous, especially with them. They'd be sending their equivalent of the German police around because they'd obviously know that there has been an aircraft shot down, and they would know eventually how many had dropped in that area, because they'd be getting reports all over the place from different sections. Because as you say, you can imagine that one would drop out in one respect, but by the time he dropped out and somebody else had, it could have been about 50 odd miles away from the other one. So we weren't actually all grouped together. We're in the sort of area of France, mid-France, all in different places. And so anyway, he was very good, and so was his wife.
And did he tell you, because your pilot, what had happened to him? Because had he got out?
No, well, we're switching too quickly to the
pilot. Sorry, carry on.
I think what I was going to say is that as far as this was concerned, this start of mine escape was simply to stay alive, stay getting moved around, and hopefully I can eventually link up with the true resistance, which are the people who actually do the fighting. Do different things altogether. One which is safe houses, where the people in it are not fighters, but they are people who are willing to hide people that are escaping. And they are all recognised as safe houses. And these resistance people, the actual people who are organising it all, know who they are. So the consequence is, once you get to a safe house, then you're on your way to perhaps getting back again. But the main thing is that first contact, she gave me a meal that evening, and the next morning she'd given me a whole pile of stuff to carry with me. Was different things for eating. The main problem was drinking. And I'm not sure how long this lasted for. I think it was either 3 or 4 days that were on the move before I contacted the resistant. But the thing was that...
So where were you moving? Were you just anywhere in particular? Or
well, no. I just followed the country, kept away from the main roads, if you like, which there were very few of them, because we were right in the heart of the countryside. Everywhere you looked, there were miles and miles of sheer fields and farms. It was chiefly farms where I was going to, because everything in the area, no matter which way you seemed to walk, there'd always be a farm building. And these were the ones that kept me going for a while, because all in the vicinity either would help or would not help. And when we got a definite yay or nay, which is what I would expect. And I always remember going to one particular place where we got, it was in the evening, and I knocked on this door of a person, and it was a lady. And she looked at me because I got all my playing gear on. So she looked at me and she knew exactly what was happening. And no, and I don't know, so go, beep, beep. So I knew what that meant. So I said, I'm sorry. So I went on my way. But at the back, there was a hay barn. It's a barn full of hay, quite high. So I thought, oh, well, I'm going to spend the night there. So I got up and climbed up to the top and pushed myself into the hay at the top because it was very cold, even with my Air Force jacket on, and pushed myself down and stayed there for the night. The next morning, I got a good view of the farm and the door where I'd knocked on. And in the morning, I could see there was a lot of chatter going on, and I think she was spreading the news that I'd been there. Nothing further developed because I couldn't move out of it at that stage because I wasn't sure of the reception I'd get. So I thought, well, the only thing I can do now is to travel at night. So that's the beginning of going through the night, and then eventually finding another farm, which I did, and eventually contact was made, and this time it was friendly. And I think it's the same old story. Sometimes you're lucky and sometimes you're not lucky. The first time I was lucky, the second time I wasn't, but the third time I hit the jackpot, because I got somebody who knew somebody who could help, which would be in the resistance. And I think this really led me to a couple of who were the man of the family was the teacher of the local school, and he knew members of the resistance, but he just was a safe house. And he had his wife and two daughters, and they went to the school that he was the head teacher of in that village. It's all in and in that village. They kept me there for now. This is something I'd have to refer back to my diary, but I don't quite know how long I stayed there. But to say that would be the first real chance I had of hopefully perhaps contacting the resistance so that I could hopefully get back to England. But this meant that he was taking an awful risk, especially with having his wife and two children, and I was staying with them. He gave me a bedroom, which I stayed in, and I stayed there, and they brought me food and everything during that period, and then I'm afraid I can't remember the subsequent, because there's so many different things I did.
I understand. Now, what's the next thing you do remember then? Because, you know, give us a feel for what happens then.
Well, I can't really. This is where it gets very difficult when you're trying to say from one thing to another, how did you do so and so? There's all kinds of things that's happening in between, really. Okay. Which, from a recording point of view, I've got to say it, it's practically impossible.
Just tell us the incidents, remember. Don't try and link them together then. Just tell us the incidents you do remember.
It's very difficult. This is the hard part, because there's so many different things happens and so many different places.
I wouldn't worry too much. Just tell us what you do remember. You know, don't try and link them together, because I think we're going to try and get a copy of this diary from you at some point, because this looks a brilliant diary. Yeah. There's no point in reading all the things. So just what are the key points you remember from it? You know, the incidents you most remember. Or we'll turn to when you recapture.
It'll be very, very basic, actually. This
don't one. Worry, you're doing fine.
I think, really, it was a question, once I'd established contact with people who were true French people wanting anything to do with the RAF, it was a godsend to them. The fact that they knew that we were helping us get rid of the Germans, which was the main thing, as far as they despised the Germans. And these were mainly contacts which were farmers, and the other main contacts were school teachers. So if you were in their vicinities at all, in when you were passed from farm, is either farm to farm or farm to school teacher, and each one you were they then, one of them said, well, you can't walk around with all your kit on. That was your first thing. So what they decided, They'd take the flying jacket off, which I hated them doing that, but I could understand. So they took the flying jacket off. The shirt was acceptable. The boots actually were flying boots. Now, the flying boots were done deliberately, because what they'd done, the flying boot itself had a top part with a zip. And what it was, there was a zip which you could unzip it and take it virtually. That was on the foot.
A bit above the ankle.
But then there was another one round the boot that had something which we could just take the top part of it off. That's the part that comes down here, and all this would come off and you'd be left with an ordinary shoe. So it's like a gaiter, this thing that you put on. It came up there and it was fur lined, obviously. So all that part, which we call the gaiter, would unzip all the way around the foot of the your shoe. So that left you, take that off and you were left with just a pair. So the shoes were taken care of. The top part, I was given a berry on my head, of course, and I was given a jacket. Now, I can't remember exactly what that was combined, but I was given two items of clothing to use. So I then became a Frenchman that couldn't speak French. Well, not much anyway. So that was the first thing, is to get rid of all the apparel that I had that was anything to do with the Air Force, and gone. They took that away. Some fortunate person had a beautiful aircrew jacket. So having established the contact with the first member of the resistance, he came on a bicycle. I was hiding in the car, going from one place to another, and hiding in a certain spot, which I'd been told to stay there, because somebody would come and pick you up. This chap came suddenly out of the blue. This is bearing in mind we're still in open countryside all the way around. This chap came with his bicycle, and he had something in a bag which he was going to give to me. And that he brought a berry, and he'd also brought a jacket. So I took the flying jacket off, and he'd come on bicycle, but he brought a bicycle with him. So he said, "I want you to come back to where he lived." So I said, "That's okay. So I'm going to take you back, and we're going to give you, have you had anything to eat?" So I said, "No, I haven't on this particular day." So he said, "Right." So I went back to his house, so we got on the bike and went back to his house, where the lady of the house was very welcome, gave me a great welcome and a hug and a kiss, said, "I've done you some omelettes." Said, "Do you like omelettes?" So I said, "Yes, I like anything now," because I'm quite hungry. So she said, "Oh, I got some omelettes there." So I had a nice feed of omelettes. Now, I said, "Are you connected with the resistance?" So he said he was. So he said, I said, "Don't you want any identification?" I said, "Because I've got identification with me." So I showed him the photograph. It was, I think, the Daily Mail or the Daily Express. With this photograph, and of course he got the date on it, and all in English. So I said, "That's my way of showing you that I am what I say I am." He was delighted when he saw that, and he saw the figure of the bomb and that was just being manufactured, and what was going on. So that was my introduction of being accepted as being genuine, because at the time, apparently, which I didn't know about, there was a lot of subterfuge going on with the Germans snaring a lot of the French people who were willing to help SKPs. They brought out an instruction which was labelled all over the country, to say that if anybody was found helping these people, they would be immediately killed. That would be it. So they'd all be warned that you were risking your life if you did, or you were found to be hiding these people. So that's why they had to be so careful, because they realised now that there was a lot of this people acting as though they were SKPs, but they were actually Germans. And so they were infiltrating into the scheme, where they managed to capture an awful lot of the fighters as well because of this. So everything that was connected with something new, like another SKP dropping out of the clouds, as they were doing on a regular basis, especially in Europe. I mean, France, Belgium, Holland, all places where a lot of them were sort of parachuting from, because A, it was either going in or coming back. Well, you're either going away from it or you're going into it. And it all sort of meant that you could understand from their point of view what risks they were taking. But as I say, I was very fortunate in getting with some good people who do anything for you, because they knew what we were doing. And unfortunately, it didn't always go according to plan. And one very serious thing happened, that all this time of going from one place to another, we very nearly got captured. And it was a matter of a pure luck. We came together, and the resistance people got us together due to the people bailing out after I was bailing out, and they got them in the same area, and they got six of us together. Now, everybody knows that the more you have together, the worse the risk. So they decided they weren't obviously going to keep the six together. So they put us all together in a what used to be a farm shed, but it was brick built, and it had no roof except just in one room. So we had, and it was open all the way around, so it was quite cold, but we managed to have a fire, keep the fire going between the six of us. And there was a farmer not very far away who was very good. He used to bring us food on a daily basis. So we'd got A, six people being fed and looked after. We even had the chap came and cut our hair. Now that was waiting for a while until they could get some more people to pass us on to, but not in groups of six. So they sent us initially to this farm with the idea that three of us would be leaving. We go into the farm together, and we all met up and had supper with the people, and then we went to bed, and in the morning, after we'd had our breakfast, we decided that it was decided that the three people would sort of toss up who'd go and who'd stay. So me and two other people decided we'd stay, and the other three went on the way and to some other destination. However, after the three had gone, it would be about lunchtime, we said we could go outside because the area was quiet, but only within the boundaries of the farm. So what we did, the three of us actually decided that we'd just go for a little walk to the towards where the hedges were, and it was quite a few trees there, and so we went out just to get the fresh air, really, because the weather was quite good. And having got and established a position where we could watch the doorway from where we'd come from, and it was where the farmyard was. So, having settled down there and just had a lie in the sun and waited, and then suddenly there was a noise of a car. And suddenly the car, we could see this and not be seen. We could see this quite plainly, that out got a German officer. And I thought, oh God, no. It was a German officer and his entourage, and he'd obviously... What had happened was, because I can tell you now, the three that had been dispatched in the early hours of the morning to another point had been pulled up by the police, and they'd been captured. And from that, they got the information about the farm. So we were then thought, right, we can't go back again. So we decided to go off at the back way, away from the house. And we were very lucky. And we got away to now where we had no idea where we were, so we had to start all over again. We eventually contacted a school teacher. We didn't know at the time he was a school teacher. And he brought us into the house and described what had happened, and he knew what had happened because the news got through very quickly. When anything like that happened in a village, the next village to it would know immediately what was going on. So he said, well, you obviously can't stay around here, obviously, because it's going to be searched any time. So he said, I'm going to take you across the river. And that was the River Elbe. So he said, we'll take you over there and then you can start afresh, because it's be a different location altogether, and they won't know about what's happening here at this particular time. So I remember he gets his rowing boat out and puts us in the rowing boat and rows it across to the other side, and we start off again. I think he'd given us something to link up with, but we again got into a position where we were getting the rail resistance involved, where the fighting was happening. And what happened was, we were getting at this stage very near to the time when the invasion was going to start. And so they were getting very tight with safe houses, if you were moving at all. So what they decided to do, this is the people from England, the basics of maintaining some kind of security for you, but also more security for the French people. So what they did, they decided they were going to send us to Maquis. Now, the Maquis in that time was the place where all the French resistance people would meet and would actually formulate all their plans for attacking trains and Germans and transport, anything to do with the Germans, they would disrupt from their headquarters. Now, the Maquis were large wooded areas, quite a big acreage of dense wood, and the headquarters was always in one of these sections. And this is where we were sent to. Now, the first thing we did there was initially was to be introduced to, we stood in a group waiting to meet somebody. And this lady came on a bicycle. And we all sort of, in plain clothes. And she introduced herself in perfect English. She says, I'm glad you've arrived. She said, we're going to allocate you somewhere for you to sleep and eat. Said, but my name is going to be to you, Pauline. And said, that's what you will know me by. But she said, I'm in charge of this Maquis, and this was something that had been sprung on her recently. The recent SOE officer had been captured by the Germans, and she was on the point, she'd been just appointed as official, acting official of that, as when we got there. So they were going to move out any time from there, but she said, in the meantime, she said, you'll come join us. You won't be with the French fighters, who are specially equipped. He said, we'll keep you in a little a farm hut, which they got, and you can stay there for the time being. But she said, the time is coming when we're all going to have to move.
And do you know what Pauline's real name was?
Yes, I've got all.
Is that Cecil Pearl Witherington?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So Pearl, it was, so we call, she said to me, call me Pauline, not by a Christian name. Now, she was married at the time to Henri, and he was also helping her with the resistance.